Let's have a meeting. Hi, my name is Janine and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at NAVA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story.
Hi, I'm Tracy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, guys. It's good to be here.
We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speakers, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And with that, I get the honor of introducing our speaker tonight. To be able to introduce a speaker is really cool for me because that means that a fellowship has grown up among me and my recovery. And for that, I am truly grateful. And Misty is a huge part of that. She helps hold me accountable to my alcoholism and my responsibility to daily be accountable for that. Please join me in welcoming Misty. She has a fantastic story to share with you tonight.
Hello, everybody. I'm Misty. I'm an alcoholic. It is very much an honor and privilege to be here and tell my story. I don't think I thought that a few weeks ago when I was asked to do this, but I have a different outlook when asked to do anything in AA. It is absolutely an honor and a privilege to be a part of this program and to give back anything that is ever asked of me. So with that, my sobriety date is February 1st, 2015, and I have a sponsor. She is here tonight, and she has a sponsor, and we are very active in the program. My sponsor holds me accountable in ways that are, we call it scab pulling sometimes. We just have a way, she has a way of getting below the surface with me to an uncomfortable level, and that is where I have to be, where I need to be able to work this program. I was born in 1973. I have my parents are still here, still alive. They're wonderful parents now. I know they weren't when I was growing up. They did the best they could. I know they did the best they could, and I love them dearly. But my father is a recovering alcoholic. We have alcoholism running rampant in my family. I have three siblings. Of us, one sister drinks some. The rest of us are in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. My dad does not attend meetings much anymore, but when he quit drinking, I was 12 years old, and my mom quit drinking with him, and we did not discuss anything that went on in the family or, you know, the whole elephant. I mean, the elephant was huge in the room, but no, we never discussed any of the tragic events, basically, that happened growing up. It was just something, you know, Dad is now sober, and, you know, the unicorns and rainbows came out, and everything was supposed to be happy and jolly. Meanwhile, my path was already set in a very destructive pattern. I can't ever remember feeling okay in my own skin. I always felt alone and incredibly fearful. I don't ever remember. I had friends, but I was never close with anyone. I have probably one handful of memories of my father, and I have one or two maybe of my mother. That's just the way it was. I felt alone and separated, and my brother and sisters and I, my dad had been married before, so my brother and sister, their mother was in Texas, and they would come back and forth, and eventually they lived with us full time. But when when things are horrible at home, it either brings kids together or it pushes them apart. And we were pushed apart. Nobody, we never came together to help each other out. It was just every man for himself. And that is exactly how I felt. It was, but even in saying that, I was very selfish, manipulative. I became a victim of everything, circumstances, the choices I made were horrible. They were all based on what I wanted at the time, how it would serve me, and none of them were good. No decision I ever made was thought out. It was never, you know, will I get hurt? Will I hurt someone else? Will this, how will this affect my future? I couldn't see past the end of my nose, much less, you know, down the road. I had zero goals in life, none. I never remember being asked, you know, what do you want to do when you grow up? Where do you, you know, where's the direction of your life going? It was just not there. And so I directed my life, and I directed it into a shithole really quick. So at the age of, the first time I remember taking a drink, I was 13. I know I drank before that, but I can't. It was just in everything that my parents did. There was sexual abuse. That was all over the place, in the family, outside the family. You know, it just seemed, I don't know how that happens, but it just does. I don't know, and it just happens. And so I felt very unprotected. I felt alone, abandoned, and that is just how I led my life. So at 13, I remember taking my first drink. There was a beauty pageant at the middle school. And I got drunk and at a beauty pageant in middle school, and I don't even know why, but it seemed like the right thing to do. And I remember going to the principal's office, and he had azalea flowers on his desk, and they had put me in his office, and I ate the flowers trying to get rid of the smell. So, and he had asked, did you do this? And I had no problem lying. Lying was worked fine for me, even if I knew that they knew that I was lying. I just felt like I could lie my way out of it. And so my mother was called, and you know, the whole shame and guilt that I had already felt my entire life was now coming to fruition in my actions. So then after that, high school came, and I became sexually active very early. Anything, drinking was awesome because it changed the way I felt about me. It helped me to feel comfortable in my own skin. It helped me to not get rid of that fear and the guilt and the shame of all the things that had happened to me, or who I felt like I was not, because I always felt like I was not, and I had no reason to feel that way. People on the outside looking in, I seemed to have a very good life, but I always compared my insides to other people's outsides. I always wanted what someone else had. Always. Nothing I had was ever good enough. There could always be more. It could always be better. I could always be loved more, better, differently. And so I was constantly trying to change everything about my insides to feel differently, and that's what alcohol did for me for quite a long time, until it created more shame and more guilt than I could have ever imagined without it. I, oh my Lord, I would, let's see, my father worked for a car dealership, and he would bring home cars from the car dealership, and I would take them at night without any driver's license, anything at all, because there was some party going on, and I would go and steal the cars and go to parties and get drunk. And this happened regularly. And I remember one time I got locked out because my sister had done the same thing, but she had a car, so she didn't have to take that car. She took her own car and came in and locked the house. So I was locked out. And I slept on a lounge chair out around the pool, and then poor pitiful me blamed that on my sister that I was locked out the next day. I don't remember what lie I came up with, but something. And then several times my father was called because I had gotten caught, and I'm in, you know, this car dealership's car, and now they have to come and pick me up. And and between my sister and my brother and my other sister and I, oh my Lord, the chaos that we caused. It was one of us all the time. And different than them, they totaled cars regularly. I didn't. So I felt a whole lot better about that. I learned my lesson. I was the youngest, so I learned that wrecking cars was not a great idea, that just stealing them was better. So, I didn't get in those kind of troubles. And I also, what's so weird is that I didn't consider what I was doing so bad. I didn't want to get caught because I didn't want to cause my parents to worry or anything. But, oh my gosh, I was causing that, and I couldn't see it. All I wanted to do was to do what I wanted to do no matter what. Anytime anything was offered to me, whether it was alcohol, anything, it never occurred to me that this might not be a good idea. Never. It never occurred to me that this is, you know, how is this going to affect my body? What is in this? It never occurred to me. It was all, if it is going to make me feel different or make me feel better, that is what I wanted. And I craved it, and I chased it with everything in me. And that's how I led my life. And it didn't take me a real long time to get to a point that didn't work for me anymore. At 19, after graduating high school, I'd had the same boyfriend for a year and a half or so. I got pregnant, and then, let's see, it was right before that I had gotten a DUI. So after I found out I was pregnant, we got married, and I had to go to court for a DUI, very pregnant and 19 years old, and felt like a total idiot. But, you know, that was another one of those fun things in life. So Justin came along, and every opportunity I got on the weekends or whatever, I would go out. The problem with that was I never, ever knew what I was going to do. I didn't know if I was going to be able to stop. I didn't know how much I would drink. I didn't know if this time it would end up in a blackout. I didn't know if I would make it home. I didn't know, you know, who I would end up with. And so the price of drinking, the consequences of drinking, got to be very high. 2 years later, I was pregnant again with my daughter, Corey. And all I wanted to do was serve myself. I loved being a mother, but at the same time, man, I just could not wait to get away. And there again, the consequences of my drinking caught up. One of the last times I drank, I went out with some friends, and they didn't drink like I did, so they left, and I decided I was not done, so I wanted to go out a little while longer. And I do not remember how that two men brought me home and dropped me off in the driveway where my husband was waiting for me when I got home. And I knew at that point I had to do something. Something had to be different. I was scared to death of losing my kids. They were, Justin was about to be 3 and Corey was 9 months old. And at that point I got sober. That was a long, long time ago. I was sober for quite a while, about 13 and a half years. My marriage fell apart and I could not. And then in the program, you know, you can't do surface level forever. You know, there comes a time in my sobriety that I had to go deeper. I had to look at those deep, awful defects that were causing my problems. And I had done that to the very best of my ability. And Michelle was my sponsor then, and God bless her, and bless her now. But I would call her when I knew she wouldn't answer the phone. And she would call back, you know, with even a couple of minutes, and I wouldn't answer. And I would go to meetings that I knew she wasn't going to be at. And, you know, I was very hard to pin down to do any kind of real work. And so after, and I had gotten her to be my sponsor, I had already been sober for, I think, about 7 years. And God only knows how I was able to stay sober that long. I can't tell you that I was extremely happy because I was going to some meetings, but my kids and my husband were my life. You know, I was too busy to be involved in AA. They were involved in sports, and so my entire identity was wrapped up in them. And I didn't serve AA. I would come in late to meetings and I would leave early. I didn't sponsor people. I did not get involved in the program. And for that, I believe those are the reasons why I went back out. So after 13 years of sobriety, and my kids were, Justin was 17 and Corey was 15, you know, the worst possible time to be drinking in front of your kids, I did. Justin, I remember he came and looked for me one night and couldn't find me. After he could drive, he was scared absolutely to death. I had told them when they were young, I said, if you ever see your mother drink, you call your grandparents. And they did. And I had wished at that point that I had not told them that. But they did exactly. And they were raised in AA. They had come to meetings. This is a cute story. My daughter played basketball, and they would say the Lord's Prayer before every game. And they were holding hands, and they said the Lord's Prayer. And then she said, and keep coming back. It works. It will work. And they looked at her. But, you know, they had an idea of AA. They also got to see a totally different, crazy side of their mother that they had never witnessed before, and I do regret that. And I'll tell you that when I started drinking again, it was like I never put it down, and even worse, And then my kids were older, so I had like zero accountability and I just went absolutely out of control. I was acting like an idiot, not my age, you know, the mother that they had known took a vacation. And That was very, very difficult. I'll tell y'all this one awful story. When their father and I divorced, financially I was kind of wrecked. It just is what it is. So I totally justified this entire scenario in my mind that it would be okay to break into his truck and steal the safe that he always carried around with him with money and stuff. So I'm not kidding you. This It was awful, but I knew exactly where he'd be, and I dressed in all black, and I had already gone to Lowe's and bought a crowbar, and I mean, all of this, I had it totally planned out, and I did. I followed through, and it was horrible. He was at his class reunion where I was not at, but you know who all found out what I had done? Everybody at the class reunion, so I don't get invited anymore. But I bashed in the glass of his truck, and I stole the safe. And I went home and, you know, pretended to my kids that everything was normal. And who do you think that the police came to first? Me, because I'm the only one that knows that he carries that crap around. So immediately when they came in, I was like, yeah, it's behind the dryer. And off I went to jail. So I mean, the insanity and the justification of the crap that I could do and pull off, and the lies that I told and believed, just insane. So, needless to say, after being in the program, and even though I can't say that I was super happy before in the program, I knew what peace was, and I knew how to not cause that kind of chaos and insanity, and I wanted so badly to be back there again. And I tried multiple times to get sober, and I could not. It was so absolutely hard. And I still wanted to do what I wanted to do and drink. I wanted to have God in my life, and I wanted my life to get better, and I wanted the crap to stop so bad, but I did not. Part of me didn't think that I could have fun or live inside my own skin without something to change the way I felt. And so it took a while for me to come back. And even during that, I had a doctor that would co-sign on all my crap and prescribe to me prescriptions. So for about 3 years, I was on two different ADD meds. I was on an antidepressant. The ADD meds made my blood pressure go up, so I was on a blood pressure medication and nuts. So throw in some alcohol, lots of alcohol with that, and I'm telling you, I was nuttier than a fruitcake. It was awful. I was nuts, and I knew that I could not get sober if I did not come off all these drugs. Because I couldn't be honest. I could not be honest, and I just knew there was no way to get off of them. And at this point, I had started seeking outside help and really trying to dig into the causes of why I was the way I was. And so, cold turkey, I quit the two ADD meds and the antidepressant and the high blood pressure medication, and for about a month I wanted to die. I tried, and that didn't work well. I'm still here, but I did not want to be here. And then after about 5 months of living in my own hell, working on me and drinking at the same time, that is miserable. That's absolutely miserable. I was doing tally marks for days of being sober because I just didn't think I could even do it, you know. It was awful. And after a week of being sober, I got in touch with Michelle again, and I started going back to meetings. Gainesville Plastic Group, if you guys are ever up that way, it's a wonderful place to go, a wonderful place to be. That is where I went back to, and that is where I picked up my white chip and got sober again. And Michelle would tell me, because it was so hard, and she would say, you know, you put that chip in your mouth, and when it melts, you can drink. And I had to do that for a couple of weeks every night, because nighttime was when I really, really, really wanted to drink. And I didn't, only by the grace of God and by my precious sponsor and lots of people in the rooms. We started going through the steps. Admitting I was powerless over alcohol and that my life was unmanageable, that one came easy. being sober and not drinking was still very hard, but I knew that I was powerless over it. I mean, I could not control. I'm the one that would throw it away and go out in the trash can and tip the trash can over and dig that crap back out. I could not not drink. Could not. And so being powerless over alcohol, I knew that I was, and my life was absolutely a train wreck, unmanageable. So that one was okay. Step two, that is one I have to go back to a lot, because God is either everything or He's nothing. And I am there a lot. I have a tendency, I believe, to still try to take things back over or justify the things that I do, and that doesn't work. God has to be everything to me, and He knows I do the very best I can, but for some reason I still go back to that. What am I afraid of? What am I afraid of? And that's a huge one for me, because fear is still a big part of my life that I try to keep hold of. And I made a decision to turn my will and my life over the power of God. We did our third step prayer in the park on our knees, and I didn't give two flips. I don't care who was around. I don't care who sees me. This is a matter of life and death. So there were people around, and I just didn't care. And I'm so very thankful for my sponsor that walks me through the steps. Step four, I'd already been seeking some outside help. So step four, looking at the things I've done to hurt other people is very hard. I struggle with carrying shame, guilt, and regret. That seems to be, you know, my best friends that walk beside me all the time, and trying to get rid of them, or not get rid of them, but I just want them to be more in the background instead of so much in the forefront. I want to walk hand in hand with peace, you know, and love, and have mercy on other people, instead of, because the shame and guilt and regret is still all about me, and I don't want anything to be all about me anymore. So making a list, and I went over all the people that I had hurt, or to the best of my ability, with Michelle. And that's when, looking at my shortcomings and my defects, those are awful. My selfishness, and then even I tend to be a negative person, and I didn't know how negative I was, or how absolutely self-seeking and manipulative and the victim. Oh my God, if I could just get rid of that one, that would be excellent. So that one to hang around too. So my shortcomings and my defects are difficult to deal with a lot. And the thing is now, there's no buffer. I have no buffer. There's no drugs. There's no alcohol. Like I could say there's no buffer. There's always something that I can shove in there to make better, which it used to be shopping. Shopping used to be a big one. Spending money I didn't have. Busyness. Oh, my God, busyness, because then I didn't have to look at it. All kinds of things that made it okay for me to not have to look at myself or deal with myself were huge. Men, you know, that's always an easy one to throw in there too. So I just there's always something that, and then when I feel like I've gotten rid of one, it feels so good, and then it'll just creep right back up and bite me in the rear end again, which just tells me I'm never going to be done. Never, ever going to be done. I'm never going to be done with the program, and God is never going to be done with me. And so I've made a list, and Michelle and I went over my list, and I pray about making direct amends. I've made some. There are a few that are still hanging on out there. The ones, you know, that you say you'll never do, those are the ones I'm still, you know, it's still gnawing at my ankle. So eventually I will have to get rid of that because I do not ever want to drink again. And I hear speakers say all the time, it's not doing the four step, not doing the four step that made them go back out. They believe it's not doing the eighth and ninth step, not making those amends, not, you know, facing up to the things I've done, but that will cause me to go back out. And I'm telling you, I don't think I have another comeback in me. That it was awful. And so now, you know, I say the third step prayer a lot. I'm on my knees constantly. The things that I used to do and get away with, I can't do them and get away with them so much anymore. It's not comfortable anymore. And so I continue to take personal inventory, and I try very hard to make amends quickly instead of letting it hang on. I still work pretty diligently with my sponsor. I call her nearly every day, and if I don't, I am riddled with guilt, not by her, but by me. So much of the things I do now are, you know, is this going to interfere with my program? Is this going to interfere with meetings? Is this going to interfere with the things that I am able to do? And recently, you know, a job opportunity came up, and I couldn't take it because I wasn't going to be able to get to meetings like I had before. And the peace that came over me when I decided to stay where I was at, to stay put and continue on the path that I'm on, relief just filled me up, and I knew that was the peace of God. My sponsor tells me all the time that, you know, my story is a part of who I am, but it has absolutely changed directions because of this program. The ending of my story is something that I have a chance, that God has a chance to change by me staying in the program. The, you know, my relationships, I have a chance to have relationships today. I never was a great friend, but I sure do try to be now. It's something that I'm still working at learning. Texting makes it a whole lot easier because you don't really have to, you know, be on the phone with somebody. You can just, you know, send a few words and make contact. So texting is nice. There's about 7 or 8 girls that I'm in contact with every day. We send each other words or phrases. My sponsor started that years ago. So it's, you know, we try to stay in the solution. I believe that is a huge thing. I don't want to stay in the, I don't want to stay in the problem. I know the problem. It's me. The solution is something that I'm not always familiar with, and that is something that I'm always seeking to find. I believe that with this program, I will find the answers that I need. That I need, and that lead me in the direction that I need to go. I am so very grateful for this program. I'm so grateful for opportunities to serve. Like I said, I used to be the one to come in late and leave early, and now I have a little bit of guilt when I do that. There's so much that goes into an AA meeting, and to just show up and leave, I feel like I'm robbing the program. And it has given me a life that I didn't have. I didn't have life before being in here. I was existing, but I didn't have a life. And so I am very, very grateful to the rooms, to the people that serve, to the people that show up continuously and chair meetings and, you know, make coffee and clean up. I don't know if any of you guys have ever hung out 10 minutes after a meeting, but there's, you know, there's always something to do. There's always something that can be done. And to do it under the radar without any, without ever being noticed. That's where I want to be. That's where I want to hang out. I don't need to be at the top of the heap. And I try to get rid of the shame and the guilt so I'm not at the very bottom anymore. I appreciate all of you that are here, and for the person that's here for the first time. There is a hope and peace that you can't find outside of this fellowship. Not for me. I couldn't, because I tried. And I don't know why you're here. I imagine it's not because things are going great. Otherwise, none of us would ever show up here. But if you want a life that you never imagined before, you can find it in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I appreciate you guys being here and letting me share my story. Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing your story. Really very inspirational. Thank you. All right, I've asked a friend to hand out the chips tonight. My friend Ron is giving out the chips.
I'm Ron Grimm, and I am still an alcoholic. Thank you, Misty, for sharing your story, and thank you for all the folks you've brought. Now, we share a home group, and if you're ever in Gainesville on a 5:30 in the evening, there's a meeting of the Gainesville Classic Group every day at 5:30, 7 on Fridays, and 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings. It's between the Monkey Barrel Bar and the Tattoo Parlor, so it's the place where an alcoholic should hang out. We use chips to help us count our time in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll go through them and give them out just after each one. We use a white chip to signify we've surrendered. And if you'd like to try this way of life, we have a white chip. Anybody like to pick up a white chip tonight? Anybody else? We use a silver chip to designate 30 days of continuous sobriety. Anybody like to pick up a silver chip? We use a red chip for 90 days of continuous sobriety. Anybody pick up a red chip tonight? A yellow chip for 6 months of continuous sobriety. A green chip for 9 months of continuous sobriety. And a blue chip for years or multiples of years of continuous sobriety.
I'm Julie, and I'm an alcoholic. And this is 21. So I have a confession. That is, I have no idea how to stay sober for 21 years. Zero idea. I know how to stay sober for one day at a time. And you guys taught me that. And I get up in the morning and I ask God to keep me sober for the day. I do the best I can throughout the day to be a good person. Try to correct myself when I haven't been a good person, because sometimes that happens. And at night I thank God for keeping me sober for the day and for bringing the people into my life who He has. And so somehow I did that every day for 21 years. But that's all I did, one day at a time. And I appreciate everybody who is here and who all the people and faces I'm looking at, the people who've been here before when I got here, and people who've come in since I've come in and have helped me so much. So thank you.
Hi, I'm Janine, and I'm an alcoholic. And this is 8. I think it's pretty cool to pick up chip on February 29th because my sobriety date is February 28th. I did pick up my last white chip on February 28th, 2008, but it was a 10 p.m. meeting and I was trashed. So my first sober day was February 29th. So it's kind of a special day. I get to do that every 4 years, right? So this has been quite a year. I've had actually quite a last couple years where I've had some real extreme wonderful things happen, some real extreme really bad stuff happen, and you know, the beauty of this program is that, like, you know, life is still going to happen, but I never for a moment ever not make my sobriety the most important thing, because without my sobriety, I don't have a relationship with my higher power. Without my sobriety, you know, I can't do service and work with sponsors, or work with my sponsor, or have a home group and do service and read the big book and prayer, meditation, all that stuff would all go away if I didn't keep my sobriety. So thank you very much.
One more time. Anybody like to pick up a white chip? Congratulations on the chips you hold.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you, one and all, for joining the Blue Chip Speaker Meeting tonight.